Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Patience Mbirimi Katoa.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you, ma'am. And how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Lovely, thank you so much. And thank you so much for joining us, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here and to be able to share some insights.
Lovely, lovely. Now, we're talking about integrating one's faith into one's career. And if you're listening in and joining us in this conversation, we are talking to our guest, Patience Katoa. Let's be honest. The hardest part of any job isn't usually the work itself. It's the people. If you've been employed, you know that the people are the ones. I mean, whether it's a demanding boss, a gossiping coworker, a teammate who takes all the credit, difficult personalities that can test our fruit of the spirit like nothing else. And today, we're exploring the difficult colleague. Yeah. Not as an obstacle to your work, but as a divine assignment to your growth. How do we love the unlovable while still getting the job done? Doesn't matter if you're a doctor, doesn't matter if you're a construction worker, doesn't matter if you're a business owner, doesn't matter if you are a subordinate to, doesn't matter the position you hold. Now, patience.
Mm-hmm.
Why might God intentionally place us in a team with people who are hard to get along with?
Oh.
Isn't that placing us in harm's way?
Oh, yeah. So, you know what? You always look at the Bible as a starting point. So, even Jesus led difficult colleagues. You know, among the 12 disciples that he had, there was Peter, who was very impulsive and reactive. Imagine working with him. James and John competed for status. Thomas doubted him. Judas betrayed him. But Jesus didn't dissolve that team. He corrected them. He taught them. He rebuked them. He restored them. And he entrusted them with responsibility. And then let's look at Joseph. Joseph was betrayed by colleagues, right? He was falsely accused and thrown into jail. David was hunted by Saul, his boss, you know, really. But Joseph learned that, you know, there's governance. He learned governance. He learned operational excellence. He learned emotional restraint under injustice. He learned strategic patience between promise and promotion. And then David, what did David learn? He learned restraint under power. He learned emotional processing instead of impulsive reaction. His leadership was not over broken and distressed men. And then Jesus, our ultimate leader and guide, he modeled patience in development, courage in correction, discernment in entrusting responsibility, and the ability to confront without humiliation. So these disciples, they were humbled. They became anchored. The disciples who humbled themselves became pillars of the early church. But Judas, as you know, he resisted development, and we all know how that story ended. And then if we're to put an HR twist to it, there's the conflict mode by Thomas Kilman, which looks at five conflict styles, which are competing, avoiding, accommodating, compromising, and collaborating. And in all these situations, that's all conflict. And then how do you then react? So conflict reveals emotional regulation, humility, boundaries, and growth and readiness. And then in direct answer to your question, I believe that God may place us in difficult teams because development happens in tension. Jesus did not remove difficult personalities, he refined them. Conflict becomes the classroom where leadership maturity is formed, leadership competencies are gained, and emotional intelligence is heightened. Thanks.
Beautiful. Now, how do we practically love our enemies? I mean, really, the word love is a big word. It's a doing word. I mean, how do we love our enemies when they are the ones competing for our promotion?
Oh, that is such a tough one. And thankfully, once again, we've got examples of how to love your enemies. And everything that happened, there's nothing new under the sun. So when you see a critical example of how to love your enemies, when David refused to kill Saul, Don't you think that's an example? Mm. Or how Joseph did not completely annihilate his brothers in Egypt. You know, when you're now in power, when people have done you wrong, and you are now able to do something bad to them. Oof. The greatest way to show love to your enemies is when you show them grace, when you have the power to destroy them. Because the long-term effect of how we respond to our enemies will determine if our legacies will fall down or move forward. So when we look at David's restraint, for example, he preserved his moral legitimacy as king. Imagine if he had killed Saul. What would the people say? Would they respect him? I don't think so. They would not look at him as the leader that they looked at him even up until this day. Joseph's forgiveness of his brothers teaches that loving your enemies means choosing purpose over revenge, trusting in God's sovereignty enough to release bitterness, even when you finally have the power to retaliate. And then, of course, our favorite, Jesus, our Almighty King.
Mm.
His refusal to retaliate did not weaken his authority. It revealed that his authority was not dependent on public approval. So the cross, which looked like defeat, became redemption. And when we look at theory as well, because we'll always put in theory as well, we'll put practice, we'll put Bible in here. We see the social comparison theory, which explains insecurity in competitive environments, and then ethical leadership theory, which teaches that authority rooted in integrity is sustainable. Let me repeat that. Authority rooted in integrity is sustainable. So practically, loving your enemy in competition means refusing sabotage, refusing slander, and refusing manipulation.
Mm.
And it means showing up and responding gracefully to attacks and hurts. You compete with excellence while guarding integrity. So don't let your words be the things that stops your enemy. Don't let your shooting words or your shooting actions, your excellence in your work, your excellence in how you carry yourself, and your identity. When your identity is secure, you do not destroy others to rise. You do not blow out another person's candle so that yours can shine. You can allow everybody else to shine. You just need to be rooted in your purpose, rooted and aligned, and knowing that you are the son or the daughter of a king.
Mm. Yeah. Not easy, though. You're saying this so eloquently, so beautifully, and I'm thinking, I just wish this was as easy as she says it.
Trust me. I'm talking from over 20 years of experience human resources and where I've led teams as well, where I've been a team member.
Yeah.
So these are things that you learn over time, but the sooner you get the information, the better it is for you, rather than learning when it's too late, when things have already turned around.
True.
But if you're getting it now and you do something about it, you know, some of these things, it sounds so beautiful in theory and you think it's so difficult. It's only difficult because we don't want to put in the work.
I like that. Now, you know, in the office setup, there's probably going to be the one that is making peace.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps you'll have a responsibility to actually, you know what, just make peace. Now, I don't know if there is a difference between peacemaking and just keeping the peace at the cost of truth.
There is a very big difference. There is a very big difference. So let's take it back to the Bible, where Jesus said, "I have not come to abolish the law." Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I have not come to abolish the law.
Mm-hmm.
He upheld truth, not convenience. So he didn't come to say, "I'm changing every single thing here." I did not come to abolish the law.
Mm.
But he also said he did not come to bring peace, but a sword, meaning allegiance to truth would sometimes create division even within families.
Yeah.
So when you're peacekeeping, you are not looking at that allegiance. You're not aligning yourself to truth. You're aligning yourself to whatever it is that's happening so that you don't get into trouble, so that people don't alienate you, so that you don't become an outcast or a victim, or you don't get harassed, which is something that is a reality in corporate. Because if you speak up and say, "But why is this thing happening?" The company can be very, very quick and swift to get you out, and it will be slowly. Sometimes it's slowly, sometimes it's faster. So that will happen definitely.
Yeah.
So what we then look at is how Jesus confronted hypocrisy and how he corrected false teaching and how he refused to dilute righteousness for social harmony. And he's called the Prince of Peace. Imagine that. He's called the Prince of Peace.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is doing so many things where he is confronting a lot of things that are not working.
Mm.
So when Jesus upheld truth, some followed him deeply and others walked away. His ministry produced both devotion and division.
Mm.
And when you look in an organization, the avoidance of conflict often creates superficial harmony, but deep internal dysfunction. People are not happy. They are just sitting there quietly pretending like everything is okay, but they are not happy at all. Peacekeeping suppresses disagreements to maintain stability, but suppressed conflict eventually surfaces in disengagement, distrust, and culture breakdown. That's where you now hear there's a toxic culture, that we don't trust management, we don't trust each other, and when they're doing engagement surveys, the engagement score is very low. So when you're looking at things like psychological safety, it requires clarity and truth, not silence.
Mm.
Therefore, peacekeeping preserves surface unity at the cost of truth, and peacemaking upholds truth, even when it creates tension. So Jesus has shown us that real peace is not the absence of conflict. It is aligned with righteousness. So sometimes truth divides before it heals. But loving peace, and we are looking for sustainability in everything that we're doing, can only be built on what is true.
Mm. Indeed, can only be built on what is true. Now, you know, in office spaces, sometimes there's office gossip or a sharp-tongued colleague. How does a Christian respond to these?
Well, as long as they're not the ones being the office gossip and the sharp-tongued one. So think about it. In the times of Esther, there was gossip. Gossip was raging. That was pure gossip.
Mm.
Court politics and whisper networks were in there. Haman was busy manipulating perception, exaggerating threats, and weaponizing narratives. And what began as private hostility became a national decree of destruction. Look at Daniel. His colleagues could not find fault in his work. Like, he's perfect in his work. So they had to find something, and they weaponized his faith. They observed his prayer life, created legislation around it, and engineered his downfall through accusation. Jesus himself was falsely accused, misrepresented, and questioned publicly. And if we're looking at it, what did the gossip do? Because gossip hurts. In Esther's time, it actually created a crisis that threatened an entire people. In Daniel's case, it resulted in him being in the lion's den. In Jesus' case, it led to public humiliation and ultimate crucifixion.
Mm.
So the sad reality of gossip is that it escalates when unchecked.
Mm.
It's not harmless. You know, we like to laugh and say, oh, gossip is fine. It's not harmless, because it shapes systems. And worst facts on the matter is that research in organizational behavior shows that informal communication channels often shape culture more powerfully than official policy. Can you imagine that? Reputational narratives can influence promotion, perception, and trust capital. So you can literally lose or gain a job or an opportunity based on what someone says about you behind your back. Oh, so then what can you do? Sometimes you can't control the narrative. The only thing that you can control is your response. Not every accusation requires defense. How was Jesus when he was being accused? How was Daniel when he was being accused? Not every accusation requires defense. Not every tone requires escalation. You don't have to be raising your voice and meeting to say, oh, you're saying this, I'm coming to you with this. No, guard your speech. Protect your focus. Regulate your reaction. Gossip may attempt to define you, but consistency, competence, and character will outlive it. So that is the saying here. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult, but be consistent. Show up in competence, and your character will outlive whatever it is that is being said about you.
Mm. Yeah. Instead of saying, "Ewe, and I'm going to clap you," I think...
Don't even try it. Don't even go there.
Now, patience, when a colleague publicly critiques or undermines you, how does one keep identity rooted in Christ rather than your own reputation? I mean, we all have reputations to protect.
So, you know, if we look at someone like Peter, he was publicly rebuked by Jesus. Imagine being told, get behind me, Satan. Just imagine that. And, you know, and this was because he, and it wasn't even because of something that he had, you know, intentionally done. He had just misunderstood the nature of Christ's mission. And that correction was direct and it was very visible. He was even rebuked by Paul as well in Antioch, where he was criticized for his behavior. So there's a lot of exposure that he has been. I mean, there's so many of them. But how did he respond to it? He humbled himself under under correction.
Mm.
He did not abandon his calling, because the thing that we do as human beings, someone criticizes you, your ego, it goes into defense mode. You are going to run away. You're going to say, no, not me. Oh, you can never say that about me. I'm the best person at whatever it is that I'm doing. You can then shrivel up, withdraw, you can run away from the situation. But no, Peter decided, you know what, let me humble myself. He didn't abandon his calling. He said, I'm still going to continue sharing this word. Yes, if, no matter what, I'm going to continue. He matured, and then he later led with boldness and stability. So, you know, when you look at another example where you have Saul, when he was confronted by Samuel, and instead of him owning up, he shifted blame, he justified his actions, he prioritized public perception over obedience, and we do that. We do that, where we'll say, no, it's not me. It's not my fault that the report isn't in. It's not my fault that this thing has happened. There's always something else to blame. Judas, when he did what he did, after the betrayal, instead of him humbling himself and saying, oh, I'm sorry, or him turning when Jesus told him that there's going to be a betrayal here, instead, he then withdrew into isolation, and then we know how that story ended. So when your identity is based on your reputation, you become very defensive. You become very reactive, and you become very fragile under exposure. But if you build your reputation on purpose, you have that purpose-based reputation. And to even simplify it, if you just say, I am the daughter, or I am the son of a king, you will be able to absorb correction without collapsing, because that rooted identity, it produces stability. And when you're unrooted, you become exceedingly insecure. If you don't know where you belong, if you don't know what you're about, you become so exceedingly insecure. So when your identity is anchored in Christ, correction becomes refinement and not destruction. And you can then evaluate feedback, because some feedback is good and you need it so that you can become the best person that you can be. And then some feedback is obviously from people that have issues, and it's their own issues. You can pray about it and say, you know what, Lord, help me to forgive, and you move on. But public humiliation, it shouldn't determine your destiny. Rootedness does. So Jesus shows us that even unjust treatment cannot override divine purpose. If it's your calling, it's your calling.
If it's your calling, truly it's your calling. Now, lastly, before I let you go, patience, how can we actually correct with gentleness to those who oppose us, or maybe those who create a toxic environment or culture?
Oh, and you know, that's something that's coming more to the fore, especially post-COVID, around toxicity and how people are perceiving organizational culture. And you know, there was toxic cultures when Jonah was being asked to go to Nineveh. It was to fix a toxic culture there, and he didn't want to go there, and he was refusing to go and fix that. Moses had to fix that toxic culture of the Israelites when they had come out of slavery. And, you know, it's how you then respond in it. So, you know, when we look at Moses, he didn't respond perfectly. He tried his best. He did as much as he could, but the pressure of leading a toxic, resistant group affected him personally. So his corrections would preserve order, But his moment of unregulated frustration that we all know cost him entry into the promised land. So toxic environments, if not managed carefully, can shape the person as much as the person shapes the toxic environment. Okay? Mm-hmm. So then toxicity, it spreads faster than positivity. Mm-hmm. And uncorrected dysfunction becomes culture. So what is this ultimately saying? That you cannot be in that toxic environment and not try to influence it. And when we're saying gently, it doesn't mean that you have to be silent, because when you are silent, it's you're allowing for the toxicity to continue and to grow.
Yeah.
But what you have to do then is to speak up. You have to speak up clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct clearly. Correct specifically and correct early. So there's a model. Unfortunately, we don't have so much time. Out of love for us to go through it, it's called a situation behavior impact model, this SBI.
Okay.
So whenever you're giving feedback around when you're in a toxic environment or in any situation, you find that things are not working so well, then you can just look at the situation specifically. Don't generalize and say, we always never get tea in this organization. You can say, on Monday, we got a tea bag that was open. On Tuesday, we got, you know, just be specific when you're addressing it. And then you address the behavior, not the individual. So you address the behavior to say, when there is no tea, you know, I'm giving such a simple, silly example, but when there's no tea bag, it's like we can't have our meetings properly. That's the impact of it. So every single time when you're trying to address a toxic situation or a toxic culture, look at specific items. What is the specific thing that is going wrong? What is the behavior linked to that thing that is making it go wrong? And what is the impact of that thing? Is it making me miserable? What is it doing? So let's say, for example, people shout in your workplace. So the situation is, on Monday in the meeting, you shouted and you banged the table. So behavior is the banging of the table. The impact was that it scared me and it reminded me of past trauma where I was in an accident or something. Please, can you try not to do that again? Can you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not now generalizing, you're now being specific. And then this then balances out courage with restraint. So you're not attacking a person, you're more addressing a behavior. And another thing that's very important is that gentleness doesn't guarantee compliance. So you are responsible for faithfulness, but you're not responsible for controlling hearts. You don't know where people are at that point in time, but that should not stop you from speaking your truth, from addressing toxicity, because it damages people. And correction delivered with gentleness, without gentleness, can definitely damage people even more.
Man. Thank you so much for this. It is quite a wonderful, wonderful, conversation we've just had. I do want to thank you so much for coming through. We will connect with you once again tomorrow at the same time and same place.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was such an honor and blessing. Thank you.
Beautiful message. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.